You're listening to Radio Golf Show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of Radio Golf Show. We have a coaching summit. We have two of our Golf Show All-Stars who've been on this program regularly. We have Adi Olafsson, who is a CPG five-star professional award winner, and we have Ted Long, who is a four-time PGA of Germany Teacher of the Year. Both have coached tour players. They have developed youngsters. They're very much involved in developing youngsters and prepare them for the life as a professional golfer, a successful personal golfer, hopefully. Now, we want to talk in particular in this program about why it is that Germany, which experienced sort of a boom several years ago with a bunch of players showing up on the European tour, has now 3, 4, 5 years later sunk back into a funk and seems to be treading water. First of all, Ted and Adi, welcome. And I very much look forward to this this episode to hear you guys fachsimpeln, how we say in German, about why this situation has come about and what can possibly be done about it. Ted, why don't you lead us off and give us a starting point where we can jump into this?
Okay, good. So first of all, on the women's side, there's probably some people jumping up and down saying, hey, we're actually doing pretty well. And when you take somebody like Helen Breem, who to me is like a generational talent, you know, her being big, strong, and I've known her since she was a kid, really nice person, the whole family, nice people, right? She's doing phenomenally. Lily Ryder, who's actually speaks about 22 languages fluently. I met her when she was a kid at a tournament, and I was amazed. She's gotten to be a pretty good-sized girl. I mean, athletically, obviously. And she just won the German girls, and she's in my rankings, I think, top 5 in Europe. I think there's a lot of good things going on the women's side. So you can't really say that they're suffering, but on the men's side, we're like stalling out, you know, and we're not moving forward. And I know that the coaches involved are asking those questions why. So I will tell you, and I've said this to Uli Eckhart, who's a really good friend of mine. We talk about this all the time, right? And I'm not, and trust me, anybody's listened to this, I can tell you these guys are extremely dedicated to what they're doing. Him and Christoph Hermann, Pascal is another guy. I mean, these guys are, I really like these guys, and they're asking good questions, okay? So here's what I would tell you. I said, a lot of times things go well, but you just get, if you think about it, you only really need 2 or 3 guys doing well on tour and a couple Challenge Tour players to win a couple tournaments and look like they're moving on, and suddenly it looks like we're doing great, right? But I would say this. If you were going to go to a bank and say, I need $2 million to start this business, they'd say, okay, what's your business plan? What's your mission statement? And then they're going to ask you, okay, that sounds good. How are you projecting out your revenue, you know, plus and minus over the next 3 to 5 years, right? Because you have to be able to measure what you expect. You can't just say, oh, we're going to make a lot of money. Right? They're going to want to know what the plan is, because at some point you might come in and say, hey, things are going really, really well. We need another 2 million. And these are the figures we think we're going to get. That's going to give you a better return on your money. And if you're hitting all those numbers, it makes you sound like you're what's the word in English? Glaubwürdig. Believable.
Yeah.
Glaubwürdig. Believable. And they can say, okay, this guy's got his stuff together. We like what he's doing, right? This is moving forward nicely. And a lot of banks are interested also in the community. So they're just interested in just making money. So the thing I would say is, and I would say Adi and I have by far the most experience at this. every year there seems to be kind of a different plan or adjustment to what it is they're doing with, all the way up to Team Germany. And I think the biggest problem, in my opinion, is there needs to be more oversight on every level. So what does that mean? If you start at the pro level, if you're going to be part of G Team Germany and get some support, which is a phenomenal opportunity, because I can tell you what, England, once you turn pro, they forget what your how your name's spelled, okay? And that goes through the bank, because I talked to a lot of the coaches from Denmark, Italy. I'm out there, Italy, France, all the big ones. I'm out there on tour, and I talk to these guys, and we really got something special here. But the problem is, a lot of these kids, as they grow up, they're in these little subcultures. Either there was some coach at some golf club, and that guy doesn't really want to get anybody else involved. He wants to do everything, right? And then when they get good enough to, let's say, get top five on the pro golf tour, now they're on the challenge tour. So Team Germany says, well, hey, let's give this guy a chance. But they don't necessarily say, hey, we want to see your business plan. We want to see the strengths and weaknesses of your player. What are you going to do to make him better? What results would you expect him to have? I'm not talking about scoring averages. I'm talking about results. You got stuff out there like Up Game that tracks everything about your ball striking, your putting, the whole nine yards, right? And you should be able to say, okay, this is what we expect. And after the first 3 months, you say, okay, this is better, but this is worse. Okay, what adjustments are you going to make, right? How do you explain this lack of performance? And when you're able to do that, you're able to look into a system and say, what's this person doing really, really well? So let's say there's six different systems in Germany. I'm just making this number up, okay? From St. Leon Road out to Berlin, me, some other people, just as an example, right? That do stuff regularly. Ian Holloway is another good example, right? Once you sit there and say, wow, Ian, really, man, this guy's really get good at short game. Well, I hope so. He's a good short game coach, right? Berlin, you might say, hey, these guys are they drive the ball really, really well, but they got a horrible short game. Nothing against Berlin, and they could have the best short game. I'm just making this up, okay? St. Leon Road, without question, the most fit guys out there, great fitness program, put a lot of effort into that, right? My guys, really good players, right? Because I teach them from very at birth to be tough, adaptable to situations, but they don't have all the resources that of St. Leon Road or even of a or what do you call it, a Berlin or anybody else to say, okay, we're going to get you with a top fitness trainer. If you're, I don't have enough time to do everything. So I'm going to send you up to see Ian Holloway. And I would definitely do that if I was someplace like St. Leon Road. I would definitely involve people that are top in their areas to come and work with the players regularly, my top players, right? I think you have to outsource. You cannot do everything for everybody, go to tournaments and do everything and really be all encompassing on a player. So then you're able to say, hey, St. Leon is phenomenal fitness and putting. I'm just making these numbers up. Don't get pissed off, Moritz Lambert. You listen to this, okay? I'm just making this up as an example because you guys do such a good job over there. But over here, Ian's group is really good on short game. So I'm going to say, what are they doing that we're not doing? And I'm a coach, right? And when I'm out there, I talk to other coaches. How'd you get this guy from here to here? He looks good. We talk about that stuff, right? We're not proud. We all know that we have to learn to get where we are, and you never stop learning. And then you're able to say, okay, here's Team Germany that's sitting up there, this Aufsichtsrat in Germany, this cloud that's the voice of everything, sees through everything, and starts saying, hey, look, you need to think about doing this. Now, if somebody starts working against you, then you got to say, okay, look, good luck to you. This is not part of, we're not gonna invest resources into this program if we're not able to hold you accountable for using those resources. Does that make sense? And that's one of the biggest sticking points right now is there's guys out there, and I think Uli, who's been on tour, he was a good player, and I mean, he's seen so many good players. He can watch guys play and he can tell you what's good and bad, right? Any coach can look at the stats, right? Players look at stats. Oh, do you know that? You should know that yourself without looking at the stats. You're the one hitting the golf ball, right? The coach should know. Oh, this guy, yeah, he doesn't drive it well. Actually, he drives it pretty well, but as soon as the game's on the line, he drives it poorly. That has nothing to do with the technique. That's a personal issue. I've got a saying, and Adi, you probably know this one in Iceland. Never look for a technical solution to a personal problem. Okay? You should be out there watching the players play. Okay? Golf is played. You have to, the player is the person hitting the ball. You have to know how this guy ticks, how he works inside and out, right? And then if he's got weaknesses, you have to address the weakness, talk to what's bothering you, and then get him into situations where you teach him how to deal with those situations, okay? This should be done at a very early age. I do start that at 12 and 14, okay? I'm talking about on the course, taking guys out in situations, saying, what in the hell are we so damn scared about, okay? And dealing with that. If you have top coaches, and the nice thing I think about the Team Germany coaches is, trust me, in most cases, there's nothing subjective or personal involved. These are objective guys that are trying to do the best possible job they can possibly do. And they are not going to go in there to make the coach look bad. They're not going to go in there to make the player look bad. They're just going to put some light, shed some light into the situation, saying, hey, this really, really needs to be addressed, right? And at the point at which we all come together and really realize, hey, this is really, really cool, right? It's only good for everybody. It's nice for me to be able to call up Adi, say, look, man, what do you do with so-and-so? Because I'm having the same issue with this guy over here. But the problem in Germany is because everybody's so wrapped up in, you know, the logo on their shirt and, you know, oh, we got to be better than them. And, oh, you come to us if you're having problems. That's bullshit, okay? I have always coached players from other teams, even in the Bundesliga. I coach guys on our opponents' teams because I coach people. I don't coach logos, okay? And that's one of the reasons I was successful to recruit people, because I care about people and I recruit that kind of people. Because to me, the environment that the kid, and they're all kids at our age, live in is what helps them develop. It makes them feel good. It pushes them. But at the same time, they know they can come back and say, hey, I'm having issues. Maybe talk to their friends, maybe talk to the coaches, whatever it is. And that moves things forward. And to me, there's way, way, way too much profilno rosa. You know, there's too many people out there worried about, oh, I'm gonna look weak if so-and-so, if I ask so-and-so a question, all that stuff. Yeah. It's total BS. And I'll give you a really good example. Craig Miller, who I absolutely love, he's one of the most authentic people on the planet. He did a podcast with you. And he was so open about, hey, I don't know anything. We take him to this guy. He really knows a lot. We take him to this guy. I'm always trying to get him around the right people. We're always learning. What an amazing thing for a guy to say, who's one of the top coaches in Europe, that he just wants his player to get better. My God. You know, he went and took lessons for a while from Marin. And I think Marin did a good job technically. But, you know, he's a swing coach, right? Swing coaches always look for answers to the swing. They don't look for the player's side of it. And Craig, who I know because I saw him when he was younger, he was a really, really good player. He knows the game, right? And he's always taught from the game back. Other people teach from the technique in, right? And it really starts from the playing of the game. And I think he's a really good example. And you see Schmidty, who's a really nice guy. I mean, he's the most respectful person. He's just a wonderful human being. You can't wish him anything but luck. Right. You see how well they're doing. And they have a really great relationship. They go all over the place together. He writes me and he goes, Teddy, we're really having problems with the driver. I said, let me see a swing. And I saw the swing and I looked. I said, I think you need to me, you're not getting deep enough in the right side, your pelvis, you know, this, that, and the other. He goes, that's interesting. We'll give it a try. Right. Who else would say that? Yeah. I mean, there's very few people that would get to that level. And, you know, I've talked to him at events. Last time I saw him was stage two of the qualifying school. And I said to him, you know, I got so-and-so over here. I says, you know, I just wish I could inject him with a little bit of this, you know, hoping that Craig, through all his experiences, which are different than mine because he grew up in Scotland, could shed some light on the situation. And it's just so fun to sit there with somebody like that and just talk about it. And the nature of this whole discussion, or not discussion, what would you call it? Open forum. Is after we had our last podcast and Adi and I just started talking about all this stuff. Yeah. Anyway, Adi, that's my take on the thing. Adi, take over. I'll be quiet.
And Adi, you've spent the time, maybe people don't know that you spent many years in Germany coaching. You can certainly shed some light onto this. And the way I understand it, what Ted is saying is that we have all the components, we just don't know how to put them together or use them, use our resources.
No, what I'm saying is we're too scared to admit we don't have all the answers and scared to ask the question, who's got the answers, and give up some of the responsibility to people above us to say, okay, we're going to let you judge our performance here as a coach or as a team so that we can move forward. That is the problem.
Yeah, and one of the, I think if we look back to where we started here, I mean, if we just look at how it's built up in Germany, we don't really have enough really good qualified elite coaches. There are not really that many that are up to that job. And we, if we go down, like, because I worked in Wannsee for a long time, for 20 years, and we had like a sixth very qualified coaches dealing with from the young, then they moved up to the next level, they moved up to the next level. So people were actually specialized in what they were doing. I wouldn't say we had a great success, but that has something to do with the city. But still, we got Alex on the tour and she's doing fine. We got Philip de May on the tour that time, and these are moving okay. But in the end of the day, we need more quality to the coach. If you think about the PGA, Ausbildung, and you think about the PGA further education, there's not really that much there that you can go to if you want to be a really good elite coach player. So that system needs to be to get a next level. And as you say, when you get that, then people, really high quality people, start to meet each other to learn and be involved in a community, because there is no community in Germany of elite coach player where they are sharing ideas, talking to each other, working the things together. Everybody is, as Ted said, very occupied of the logo that they have, and they really try not to share the knowledge and share what they need. And before we get that, a community of the best coaches, which allowed other coaches, future coaches, to be in there for the discussion, for the development of the game, we're not going to get any much further. There is a lot of good things going on there, and there's a lot of changes, as I've said, when they changed the Bundesliga, because I'll get more of the oldest guys to play longer. There was more competition getting into the teams. The youngsters had to work harder. And of course, then the players, the very good players that make the national team that get into the Team Germany, they get different paths, they get different tournaments, different things. But it's still quite amazing how few of them really, really get this in. You see the quick path up into the tour and a success. And then, because we were starting with the girls, and I remember when Alex and Max won the European Young Masters. Do you remember that, Ted? Max Schmidt. That
Oh yeah,
was somebody.
he's a 97, so that would have been
That's
2013.
2016, I think.
He's a 97 or 98.
Yeah, okay, 13, yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, and the thing is, because that comes to the coaching part and the ideas what we're dealing with a little bit in the nutshell. Because all the I mean, I had a great opportunity. I have to tell this little story. I was caddying for a player on the Challenge Tour, and with me was Manastero in the flight and Max Schmidt. And the funny thing, both of them were guys who never actually seen a coach in their life that really coached them technique. And they both were junior stars. They really could hit the ball at 17, 18, 19 years old. But when the feelings start, getting away, when the thinking faded, the faith didn't come, they didn't have a clue what to do.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so both of them just like lost their cars, they lost their confidence. So they had to start again. And that's one of the philosophies that in a country like in Germany, where we actually are facing a winter, we need to use the time to make those players knowledgeable of what they're doing.
That's exactly
Because
right.
And we need to trust them to be, we need to take, when you have a youngster of 15, 16 years old, and you cannot just let him do it brainlessly and think that's gonna work when it comes to the tour. You need to educate those players much better.
Said one thing that knowledgeable is where it starts, but the idea, but the knowledgeable is because he has to understand he's responsible for what's going on. Stop blaming
Exactly.
coaches. Oh, I switch coaches. Everything's a lot better now. Yes, sure it is. Just like with the girlfriend. Oh, wow. This girl, she's a lot more fun than the old ones. Okay, good. Call me in 3 months, okay? I mean, when the when, I mean that's a very, very good point. I would like to say this, because you talk about the Bundesliga, and I had a lot of success in the Bundesliga, okay? And our guys, we probably could have won more finals, but I let my guys play the big tournaments, right? I had a lot of success, so a lot of more. 1 year in France, we had four of the six guys came from Mannheim to play the AMM. But Uli Selig, who I love, Uli's he's a really good guy, and he did a lot for my son Hurley. He was big into all these Lehrgänge where you go out and you do this team building and all this stuff, right? So by the end of the season, between that playing a ton of events and already had playing eight events since February when he played in the United States, these guys are checked out of the net. They're gone. You with me? They have nothing left. And they just, the day after they're flying to the States, they're already gone. They don't care, right? So my thing about the Bundesliga, which I think would help, okay, first of all, I would have three regions. Then you'd have four teams in each region. The winners, top three, would go on. And the last Spieltag, the top three second place guys come together and the winner moves on. Okay. What does that do? First of all, it gives you an extra week where guys can go out and play a big event. Okay. It's not as stressful. Number two, what I would do is we have eight and three, eight players, three Ersatzspieler, re replacement guys, reserves, I guess, in English. I would get it down to six and one. Okay. So let's, why six and one? How can it be in a world championship there's only three people playing? Well, there's a lot of teams. Okay. How can it be in college there's five guys playing and you count four? Well, because there's a lot of teams. Why is it the European amateur championship? It's also, what is it, five-man teams, right? Because
Six, yeah.
at some point is a big drop-off in the quality. Right, you nobody has five world-class players in their team, right? Well, I got news for you. In the Bundesliga, you win Final Fours with the shoe clerks at the back, the guy who's done his hobby, the guy who's started working, and you're trying to get this guy to come to practice. Oh, I can't make it. Or, oh, why don't you play a tournament? Oh, I've been really busy. I got to study for this test. That can't be what it's all about, right? If you had smaller teams, first of all, the clubs could save a lot of money, which then they could invest in me and in more quality junior work, right? And number two is, if you were a team like St. Leon Hamburg or something, you've got so many good players, you could say, well, we're going to show up with these guys. We're going to let these guys play tournaments. You could manage the quality of the individual's experience in the summer. And you know this better than me, Adi, because you got 2 months less of summer, probably we do. In Iceland, there's a time where it's from the beginning of May, at best middle of April, and the first weeks of September, they roll up the rouladens and everybody leaves. It's over in Germany, and you got to get all these Bundesliga things in. Then you got the Landesmannschaftsmeisterschaften got to get in. Then you, if your kid's good, he's on the AK-18 team. He's in the first team. He's in the Landeskader. He's in the friggin' this kader. And in the end, these kids dizzy. How is he going to develop? How's he going to go play the French boys? How's he going to go play the English boys? How's he going to go play the Spanish? How's he going to go play the Italian? To really find out in all these different conditions what is has to get better in his game, and also give him the experience of living out of a suitcase, becoming responsible for even getting your clothes washed. Hey, where are we eating this week? He starts learning to organize his schedule. Because I have said this since I've been coaching, because I was started as a playing professional, but I was already starting to coach. And I said to people, probably my second or third year, I said, being a playing pro is fun, but the hard part is the travel, getting your clothes washed. And in the old days, and people can't imagine this before there was Google Maps, You got to go down to the second stop on the number 54 bus. Look for something. Walk a mile down the road on the right, and you'll see a sign that says Garrett or whatever it is, right? And that's where the golf course is, right? Where are we staying? Well, there's a couple options. When you get here, we'll try to help you find a room. That's what it was like, right? Now you've got the internet, but you still have to get all of that done. I've got top players who the parents are still managing their entry forms. How can that be? These kids should be out there before they come home, going through the internet and planning their own schedules. They just sit there and wait at the Landesebene, at the, you know, that's the regional levels for people who don't know what that means. The coaches put out the schedule. Oh, these are the tournaments. This is where you need to be. You're going to go to this trainings camp and all this other stuff. Okay, wonderful. And then you try to tell him, hey, you need to play this. And the guy goes, well, you know, he's 13. He's a bit young. I don't think he's ready to go out and play internationally. I'm like, well, why'd you put him in the team? Okay, why? A guy who's 12 years old. I got a 12-year-old kid, Paul Bagger. He's been traveling to play in the Doral Publics. I've got him playing internationally since he is 11 years old. And the kid's really a phenom physically, okay? And he's got good nerves. He's going to be a hell of a player, you know? And when you get that kid at that level that early organized, then he's got a good chance of succeeding. You don't want to be have to filling in all these gaps as they get 17, 18 that you didn't take care of and should have been done at 12 and 13. And then you wonder why you need 22 coaches. Because there's so much to do with the guys. The best level, okay? This is how you teach. You communicate, they demonstrate, they practice, and they play, okay? Now, there's a lot of dot ones, dot twos, and dot threes in there, but that's basically what happens. But I always say this. The highest level of teaching is level five. And that's when you, and I play a lot of golf and hit a lot of balls, when your players come back and are able to teach you. Now they've got it figured out. I have got my own team, right? Hurley's my short game coach, right? Hummer's the head coach. Wolfgang Glaube is an assistant to the assistant. And he's pissed that he's not the head coach, right? And then I've got, you know, everybody's got different tasks, right? And I said, oh, I've got my team assembled, right? And people are saying, like, I love the fact Hurley has, he's got my eye. He can see through motions. He can see people, right? And he says that you always do this. And then he tells me, why do you do that? I go, Hurley, you cannot be shitty and do everything right. Okay. He said, just tell me what you want me to do. Okay. I get it. Okay. All right. And then the fun thing is when you release a little bit of the responsibility of being the smart guy to them, all of a sudden the flow, the trust goes because they're not scared to make a mistake because you're not scared to make a mistake. That's the most wonderful part of the teaching. And the guys that have stuck around the longest, they enjoy helping you because they care about you and they know you care about them. And to me, I'm missing a lot of that. And I go everywhere.
Yeah, I can give you a great example of that because that guy who, Gunnar Arne, who qualified now for the US Open, I coached him from 2019 to 2024, 25. We split work in the club. So I took more care of other guys and other ladies, and he kept on with my very good coach. And he actually got a beautiful team around him. But this guy, we once bought two putting sand lab things, so one for the PGA, one for the golf club. And this guy, he came every day and asked, can I get the putting sand from you? And I said, no problem. So I taught him a little bit and then taught the next day. So after a week, he was using it and I'm looking at him and he said, do you understand everything here? And yeah, I think so. Then he always asked. Then about 2 weeks later, I needed a guy to run the padding sam lab for the PGA qualifying, both for the PGA education program. And that's the guy who knew the padding sam better than anybody of the PGA pros that I knew. After like 2 weeks working with that thing, and that's, you know, as you say, he could, after 2 weeks, teach others much better than anybody knew about what he was dealing with.
Yes. Isn't that fun, too, as a coach? Because, hell, this guy's teaching you. Yeah. I mean, Hurley does that with me on that 7-pot lab. I got my four or five things I look at. And then he's got this one with the backswing transition, you know, where it's got those lines. And he goes, no, no, I'm transitioning to her. Like, oh, where you see that? Oh, you see this? And here's the graph. I go, okay, I got that. I hate graphs. Okay. And I'm a technical guy.
And I think actually what we are doing now, and because we have quite, in my golf club is not a private golf club. It's like a sporting club. And so we have a different setup. We have probably one of the youngest golf clubs in Europe. I think I found one in Madrid that is younger, but very young, very dynamic. And we have a lot of kids running around. And we have like, I mean, we've had a system. I built up the elite system and started to do that actually in 2017 for the golf club. And I took over 2019. It worked well. We won every tournament. We got the best players. But then we start thinking, I mean, we are spending so much energy as coaches coaching people with, like, they're good, but they're never going to be really good. And this is something that in the modern coaching, I've now put in a proposal to the golf club that we stop that, that we get more quality coaches from the age of 10 to 16.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, and the goal is, if you're not at handicap plus with 16, you actually go into a group where you can meet Saturdays morning at 8 o'clock and hit some balls together. But you have to get some quality before you start into to be coached as elite player. Because that's what my proposal is. And actually, the club says that makes sense, because if you're not good enough at 16, it's not very likely you're going to survive as a PGA pro.
Especially if you've been playing since you're 10 and 12. And I know that I remember when I was at St. Leon Road, that was one of my big discussions with the general manager then, was, well, in handball or whatever it was, or hockey, Ben Pater says that, you know, you're never going to know who's the great player is going to be till they're 18 or 19. I said, okay. So, but you telling me that Franz Beckenbauer can't go out onto the friggin' Hofpause at the school and tell you which guy he would take to try out for kicking? I said, if you've played golf, you see kids when they start, what their eyes sharpen up and you see the focus, or you see the kid who's out there practicing all the time. They're kids that get it, right? Those are the ones you invest in. Can you spend an inordinate amount of money and time on an average kid who's, you know, a decent athlete and spend all the time and make him a very good player? Absolutely. But you don't have the resources to do that at a national level. So you have to rely on the filtering system, like you say, from 10 to 12 to 14, to where, and I've said this, and Christoph Hellmann, I know he likes this, and I think this is awesome. We should have two camps a year and also two tournaments a year where we take our best 14 and under kids to go play the English and whatever else the next best one is. I should know that. I could name a couple of them, but I don't want to be whatever. And then take them in a camp and let them know, this is how you should be training. This is the stuff you should be doing fitness-wise. This is short game, everything in the camps. And then when you go to the tournament, you teach a guy, hey, how do you play a practice round, right? That's a huge advantage if you know how to do that, taught by guys that are former players. Max Röhrisch, who I really like at Neuhof, they're starting to get him involved. And he talks about stuff like that because he was a hell of a player. I mean, he was a vice, second place European amateur, won a Spanish am. I mean, he was a hell of a player until he screwed up his leg, right? I mean, really, and a good guy with a lot of good. Those are the kind of guys you want with those young kids, right? And once you've identified that, then you got to pull them out of these regional katas and start getting them into elite kata. I don't care if there's six of them. Okay, if it's 4 1 year and 8 the next, hallelujah. But keep the elite guys with the elite guys and keep them moving forward. There's too much generality going on. If you sleep with dogs, you get fleas, okay? These Landeskaders are big, and, you know, they have to be fair to different regions of their whatever it is, their area, their state, and get kids in there. But it's really pretty easy for anybody's a good coach to go to any one of those practices and tell you if there's any good players there at that level. You could just see by their engagement how they do things. And that's where we got to get. we got to get earlier and identify these kids. And then I'm going to tell you something. It's going to start taking off. Because think about it. Just look at the playing system in Germany. You play two or three AKs. Then from there, you go to the final or the regional, not the regional, the Landeskademeisterschaft, the state championship. You know, if there's two and there's a state championship, then from there you go to Nationalscheid. If you're a kid from Sachsen Thüringen, you know, one of these small places, right, you could be the best kid in Germany. You don't see anybody can break 90 until midsummer. Yeah. Your parents put you in a car and start taking you around to international events. And guess what? That costs money. And I can tell you that out of experience because I took my son everywhere. Okay. That costs real money. And if you got more kids at home, then you got those kids at home. Somebody's got to go with the kid. It breaks up the family. That's not an easy thing to do. So that kid, we have to change things around to recognize talent earlier, get talent playing talent, and then move that talent internationally within Europe to play against the best players. If you look on my website, europeangolfrankings.com, and you go under the 14 and under, the French kids, I'm telling you what, these kids are playing 20 to 25 events a year, okay? Big events. Their system is so much better than our system. They have Grand Prix, which are like, you know, obviously big tournaments. In like for the juniors, they got like eight of them. And some of them are even majors. Then they got their net. And all these kids go play in Spain. They go play in England. They're dominating the rankings. And you wonder why they get so many guys on tour. When those guys get to the tour, they're ready. They're ready. We didn't even have 14 and under rankings until a year or two ago when, you know, luckily Kachabaya and Michael Scholl, who do that part, you know, convinced the committee, because there's a lot of the old guys, the presidents that are in these, whatever the hell they call those things, what do they call that thing, Vorständen, that are like, well, we don't want to, you know, push the kids too early. Bullshit. Bullshit. You're going to tell me a 14-year-old should be kicking up there till he's 16 years old before he sees somebody who's faster than him? That's just mind-boggling.
I just have to, you know, because we have in the Masters, I think, wasn't eight or nine people from Scandinavia?
Yes.
And I can't remember who played for Germany, but
probably nobody.
There was nine people. And I mean, the thing is, actually, it was a different situation. I know the situation in those countries quite well. So there was like two Norwegian guys. My daughter lives now in Norway. And I visited her very many times. And the kids there, they're doing sport the whole day. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. They go to one gym, to the next football practice. They're just moving around the whole day. There are like spielplätze. They're like areas around all this little city where kids are just doing stuff. So they're training their body and they're training their, you know, fitness without even knowing it, because it's so much fun because it's all around. The coordination gets so good when they start doing different sports, you know, they develop. If I think of Berlin, there's nothing. There's nothing for the kids in Berlin to play with, to be kids to develop those skills. And we need to be much more aware of that. And then, I mean, there's a different ideas of not playing tournaments or competing before the age of 12 or 14, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't really matter. It's the amount of sport that these kids are doing, how they develop their mind and their body.
Yes.
Because, and we are lucky here in Iceland where we still have a lot of space and areas to do that, but it's getting always less and less in the big city. But the thing is, this is, and then again, I wanted to mention, because in Denmark, if you think about the federation doesn't really do much. That's more like a one guy. That's more like they got their own Ted Long in Denmark. That's Andreas Carling. And he's so enthusiastic. He's got his team around him. He's got everything set. And people trust him. And people know how good of a quality. So he gets the best talents to him. And they learn from each other. And this is, for me, the kind of community that is the best thing to thrive. You come with your own will into some academy and you want to learn, you want to be better. You see all the other kids there running around, working hard, and that makes you better. So there's a different situation in each of the countries in Scandinavia, but they're all working with a lot of space, a lot of material that has done a lot of sport before they decide to be very good. They of course then they are really good as 10, 12, 14, 16.
So I'm going to tell you right now, if Davy Standers waved his hand, he's listening right now. South Africa, who slaughters the Germans, okay? And he always brings that up. He's everybody's bait, love this in Facebook. I always write when he puts something in there and compares how much better they're doing the Germans. I always write there, I said, making friends, P, because he just is always in your face about it. But I'll tell you why. He grew up, and people don't know this, he and Ernie Els were like best friends, and he actually was coached by Ernie's dad. You have to play five sports in South Africa. You have to play five sports. You have no other choice. I'm an American. I played American football. I played baseball. I played basketball. I even ran track. Golf was just a sideshow. It wasn't until I was 15 or 16 years old that I went to a high school, even had a golf team. Until then, I was told to kill people. I even wrestled. I did everything. Everything was based on hurting somebody else, right? Which would explain how I coach, right? So you have to then say, okay, Germany is never going to become that. It's just not. Handball and soccer, Fußball, is so much more fun than golf because you're with the guys, you're running around, you're able to punch another guy and somebody likes it, whatever it is, right? It really is a great environment and I love it, right? But the kids we get come from well-to-do parents at golf clubs, right? And they're never going to be that. So we then have to say, okay, how do we look at it? Sanlitun Road, and I think Eiko Schulze-Hans did a phenomenal job there. He built that amazing facility, that athletic facility at the back of the range, right? And you got kids coming from everywhere to go there because that's basically the only option they have. And they got good physical fitness coaches, hired Flo Münch, who's to me one of the greatest, of whatever he is, fitness coaches on the planet. He knows everything about 3D. The guy is phenomenal, okay? Heading that thing up now. And it's just amazing. And you see their athletes. They got great, great athletes. Their guys hit the piss out of a golf ball. They're in good shape. They look great. So, that goes to show you outside of them, and I'm sure there's some clubs say, oh, we do fitness with our kids too. And I think that's great. But they got real professionals helping those kids. And especially the girls, man, when I go hit balls on the back of the range there next to the fitness studio, I see those kids, those girls doing sprints against each other and everything like that. And I see the attitude that they have. They do a phenomenal job with their girls there. They really do. I mean, they produce tons of good players. I feel bad for a lot of kids that come from other areas thinking, oh, I'm going to go there and I'll be on the LPGA tour. Well, guess what? You might find out that you're not going to be because there's other girls there. And then that's why the cream kind of rises to the crop. A lot of kids fall out to the wayside. And that's not because Sankt-Leon does a bad job. It's just because when you have so many kids, at some point you can only let the good ones play, right? And that's where your time and energy goes into. It doesn't mean when that kid leaves that he hasn't gotten a lot better. It just kind of shows them that it just shows them that what do you call it? That when you get that many good players around each other, somebody's not going to be the best player.
And I think attitude is something that we'll talk about hopefully a little bit later. But setting the system aside for a minute, I mean, there are young kids everywhere, and there are young kids all over Germany that have beautiful action. They're incredibly fast. They can hit it a mile. Let me ask you too, what do you think the things are that make the difference in whether a young player progresses to where they should progress?
Go ahead, Donnie. Or
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, in my experience, it's always if you're a player, you need to trust the process. But the process needs to be really well organized and talked about. You need to know where you're going. You need to know, and the parents this as well. They have to know the path and what it costs and what it's about. Everybody needs to be at the same in the same book and at the same page all the time. It's really important. And you need and the, if If there is no trust and if there's no cooperation, it's always going to be really hard.
Yes.
So these little things are the first things you need to make sure that everything that is there. Then it's your the, I mean, if you cannot as a coach have more or be more dedicated than the player. The player has to push you. He has to call you at 11 at night and say, "Hey, I need something." He has to be more eager than you because it should never be that the coach has to push the player. You want to be all the way around that the player is pushing you to give him more because then you know that he is on the right side. He wants more. Because if you're trying to feed him, it's just like if you're giving a grass too much fertilizer, it's going to get fat and die.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So these are the fundamentals in the way of getting a player to be good. If the player doesn't bring it with him, it's really, really hard to get him good. If I mean we all know Ted know this well. I mean, you've got so many parents that really want it, but the kids is just, you know. Even if it's just 90% there, it's not enough. He has to be absolutely fully in and follow the process, wanting it and working hard.
And
And
part of the process.
there's one word I always use in that, in German, Neugierig. You have to have that. You need to be curious about how can I get better than my next guy here. If you don't have that, it's really difficult.
Yes. What makes him better than me? I always love, I mean, I have a personality. I have no problem talking to anybody. My family says about me, he never met a stranger. Okay. So I can talk to anybody. And when I was on the challenge tour, I always played with the best players because I wanted to see what are they doing that I'm not doing, right? I just wanted to see it. And I say, was it the practice round? And the practice round, I go, hey, what do you think about this? Oh, I don't like this. Oh, I just played this way and forget about it. And I'm like, then I'm the guy I lived with who was a very, very good player. Ted, if you're going to win a US Open, you got to be able to take this situation on. Well, that was the worst advice ever. Okay. That led to, 11 birdies and 22 double bogeys, okay, because you're trying to take on situations you're not ready for. But I think that, I love what you said, and I'm 100% behind that. The player then has to know, he has to realize it's your responsibility to take the information and do something with it, right? I love it. I had a kid today, Tim Ketchwan, one of my favorite guys ever, right? And I've been hammering him about stop being comfortable and waiting for the answers and start go out there and start finding them. He says, I figured something out. And he told me, he goes, yes, that's exactly right. I said, I do that too. Yes, I love it when a guy starts telling me, on this shot here, I figured this out. Now you got the kid where you want him, right? Because now he's to be able to fix himself on the road. That is so huge. And this is really important. And Germans have a problem with this because everything's got a DIN number, Deutsche Identification Number. Right. So it has to be proven. It has to, to be okay, it's reliable. I lived with a woman who was a psychologist for 4 years, and I learned a lot about psychology. And I also learned out a lot about myself. Right. And that got me on this path of realizing, okay, I know I'm screwed up, but I don't have to be. Right. So it's kind of fun to kind of like unscrew yourself, I guess, to put it in a nice way. Right. And I'm telling you right now that. A system. When I studied psychology, the first couple of courses were only about testing. I go, what does this have to do about psychology? And I realized in psychology, you have to test things over and over and over again. And you have to go into the test saying, what results are you expecting to get out of this? That proves that your formula or process, as you say, can predict behavior. Okay. Now, what's the definition of a successful process? It allows you to predict behavior. And here's the big part. It lends itself to being able to improve itself to predict behavior better. So you can't just say, well, until it's perfect, we're not going to use it. It's always evolving. Everything's evolving. And understanding that evolving and growing is part of the process. And they say, and as a coach, you have to be able to, and the head guy for France that runs their performance, 3, 4 years ago, he's walking around with me. He goes, yeah, I said, man, you got a great job. I really like your energy. And yeah, I'm kind of scared. Sometimes if I'm going to do the wrong thing, I said, who cares? Learn from it. Teach the kid, hey, good try. Let's move on to this. Teach the kid the same thing you want him to do, is to say, hey, it wasn't a mistake. It was, there was a better way, and we figured out there's a better way. Let's just keep moving. Let's just keep moving.
Yeah. Yeah, I had two girls here. Frank, sorry.
No, please go ahead. Please go ahead.
Because I think it's about a lot of, you know, good examples, because examples all the time. So I had two girls, and they came and said, I said, where do you really want to get better in your game? And both said putting. So what if about the putting? Yeah, I have a trouble reading. I said, and they said, yeah, I have distance control. I said, well, pretty much the same thing. So with me tomorrow, and you tell me tomorrow what you're going to do about it. So then they went home, and the next day I said, okay, girls, what did you find out? And the one said, yeah, I need to practice more. I said, well, okay, what do you need to practice more? Yeah, I just need to hit more balls in the greens. They said, okay, that's your answer, fine. What's your answer? Yeah, I found out there is an app I can use in the telephone to see the degrees on the green. I found out there's a system called Aimpoint. So she had resources. Yes, they've gone into the thing to learn how, what was possible. Mm. What help could she find to get better at reading? So these are two ways of doing it. Because the other ones just said, okay, practice, practice. But practice without even having a clue what to practice. And the other ones try to find solution about how to get better. And these two type of personalities, and it's that you have all of them. But the one that searches the answers for itself, when you give it a little bit of a hinge, that's the one you want. You know that's going to be good.
Yes. And those people are going to waste the least amount of time, okay? Yeah. And I always tell people, how can you measure frustration? I measured it in the amount of clubs I broke. I averaged 14 a year, okay, for like 10 years. I've launched putters in the middle of lakes. Mm. I mean, that's okay. That's pretty high frustration levels, but I tell it to this way. So I live in Heidelberg, and the A5 runs north and south. So you get on the A5, and you start heading to Stuttgart, and you've driven an hour, and you heard that it's an hour from Heidelberg to Frankfurt, and you wanted to go to the airport. Well, now you're twice as far away, but you've put all the effort in to get to Frankfurt. You just put it in the wrong direction. So the farther you get from where you started, times, this is the Hebel vehicle, the amount of effort you put into it is the definition of frustration, okay? Yeah. And if you're measuring frustration, if you're not learning, if the process you're applying is not being successful, what do? Slam on brakes, evaluate, get the car heading in the right direction, and suddenly your frustration level goes down. Oh, hey, we're an hour down the road and I'm back at the start, but we're going in the right direction. And you laugh about it. You got to learn to laugh about it, right? You do. And it's this, it all goes back to what we said before, that if people have these business plans on what they would do, what are the results they expect? How are you going to approach it, right? And if there's six or seven different business plans out there and you're the head of the DGV, whether it's Eckhart or if it's Christoph Hermann, I'm only speaking from the men's side here, okay, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then you say, you know, you guys ever think about they do this? Hey, that sounds pretty interesting. Maybe we should try that, right? How much more successful are we going to become? Because right now we're just out there fishing and we got a big tackle box with all kinds of different baits and we don't even know what kind of fish are in the lake almost. You know, we'll just try this, I'll try this, I'll try this. Well, the old fashioned, we'll get the worm out. Something's got to want a worm. You know, I mean, we got to get away from that. We got to get a little bit more scientific about it. And I realize, you know, they're very scientific about a lot of things, but I'm just talking about scientific by looking at the overall thing of what is your system.
Maybe like too scientific?
No, it's not.
No, I don't think so. No, no.
No,
I think we as an expert need to be able to think in that way and deliver that. Not everybody needs to know the science behind it, whatever, but we need to be able to be scientific about everything.
It allows you to measure things, Frank. It allows you to measure things. In the old days, when people got fit, and trust me, one year, my first year at Sunderland Road, man, I bought 580 XDs. That was a TaylorMade, the hottest driver. Man, I bought four of those one year because I found out each shaft, they'd sit there and go, oh, this one goes the farthest. You're the most ball speed. And I get on the golf course, try to hit shots I want to hit. The ball's going sideways, right? So I keep trying new one, trying new one. Nowadays, you sit on a track, man, you clip the shaft in. Inside of 20 minutes, you got the perfect club for you. And when you go out on the course, you know that thing works for you, right? But in the old days, you just had to do experiments. There's so much science involved in everything you do. I mean, there's even tests people take mentally to show where are your skills, where are your weaknesses, and that's the things coaches need to be aware of. One of the number one things that you're doing as a coach is learning how that person learns. That's where you go from communicate to demonstrate. You have to adjust your language to how they can interpret it. One of my favorite guys, the second favorite person I ever worked with in my life. My first one's dead. He was my greenkeeper in Oftesheim, where the Americans were. The second one's Neil Hardgrave in St. Glen Road. Embodies the love of the game, working with kids. He's the greatest guy in the world. And he always had the second team, and I had the first team in the juniors. And I'm sitting there watching one of his kids. We get there early. The kids are all hitting. I say, hey, that kid needs to learn to rotate better. I keep telling him he doesn't listen. I said, well, how do you know that? He goes, well, he's not doing it. I said, okay. So I said, everybody get here. I said, everybody's arms length apart. Put your arms on your chest. Close your eyes. Turn in the backswing. I said, turn in the falter. I said, there you go, P. He's turning. That's what he thinks turning is, right? So we have to understand that maybe I have to put my hands on the guy. Maybe he has to see it in the mirror. Whatever it is that he needs, other guys may need to define. How far should my feet be apart? Should the angle of this leg be better than this leg to help me rotate? Some guys need to know that. At some point, they need to understand it. But once you understand how people learn, and I'm sure every pro who's out there listening, who's ever taught a golf lesson, has one or two people that come a year who get it. And they think, man, I'm really good. This guy sees he's the only one that finally understands. No, he's the only one you can communicate to. Okay. So we have to do as coaches is understand how do these people learn? And that's where it all starts. And then these poor kids, and Adi said it, they have to want to learn. They have to want to get better. If you teach them how they learn, man, so they understand this is the way you process information.
Yep.
You're a long, long way ahead of getting these people on the fast track.
What you two guys just said, the way I heard it, is that it was kind of confirming what you said at the beginning, Ted, that there's no technical solution for a personal problem. Yeah. Because it seems to me that what you're talking about, what makes a difference whether a young player progresses to the level of becoming a major champion or a Ryder Cup player, are the intangibles. The intangibles, whether it's mental toughness, work ethic, whether it's self-confidence, whether it's knowing how to score. And Adi, you said that we don't have many coaches in Germany who are up to the job for doing that. How do you guys teach that? And I think what comes into play for me is whether you believe that the game is built on feel and talent, or whether it's built on technique and mechanics. And you guys are in a position.
I think let me just answer because Ted said that in the beginning. It's a little bit of we as a coaches, we are limited as well, so we need to understand that. That's why he mentioned Craig and said that's a great thing about Craig. He goes to the guys he trusts the most to do the thing. I'm lucky in the golf club I am, because I got a, you know, the other side of me, exactly the opposite of me working with me the whole time. Mm-hmm. So I'm good at a lot of things, but he is very good at other things, but I'm not very good. So, and this is the thing which is so important. We have a huge team around us of different people who are specialists in different areas that we throw the kids to when they need that help. Whether it's about the equipment, whether it's about the mental health, whether it's about the fitness or the doctors and things like that. So we cannot be specialists in all areas. That would be terrible for us, and that would be really burn us out after in a very short period. We need to be, you know, aware that we cannot do everything.
You have to delegate.
That's really the important thing. Yeah.
You have to delegate.
And I think you have to be. I mean, we have actually a system in our club which we use, and it's called the Total Player. So it's a very old setup, but the player is in the middle, and then you get all those little things around it which are connected to it. And And we just check though with the players all the time. We just go in and have a seat with them. It's okay. Nutrition is sleep. How much are you sleeping? How much do you eat? We go through. So next 10 days, you need to, tell us how much you're sleeping, because juniors need to sleep.
Yeah.
And we actually we check all those things in the mental set as well. I mean, how is your routine? How does it develop? How is your concentration? How is your anger control? And all those little things we went, and as I said, we have tests for that. We really do tests on a regular basis to make sure that these kids learn that it's not only about hitting the golf ball. If you want to be successful, you need to know what shoes you're playing the best, what's the best shoes for you. You
Exactly.
need to know all these little things. And then, of course, statistic, as I said, you're a specialist in that. I mean, if you're not keeping statistic, how on earth are you going to know what you're going to do? So there's a lot of things in this total player thing that we check with the players regularly. But we just, because that's you need to do. And we have meetings with them all the time, and we have meetings with the parents, and we're just trying to make them learn to be responsible for that, not just for hitting the golf ball straight, but
Yes.
for being a total player.
Yes. And I'm going to tell you something. Frank, you used a word which actually a lot of people would use that don't really understand. You said intangibles, okay? Intangibles are things you can't measure, okay? You just know they're there, you feel them. But I got news for you, and Adi just said it. You can measure almost anything. Attitude, you can measure. Is a guy out there alone? Does the rain bother him? Does he complain? There's a lot of ways you can measure things that other people call intangibles. Oh, he's got it. Okay, what does he have, right? If you could define what he has, then you could say, okay, ask him, hey, where'd you learn to do this? Oh, I was a judo. I did judo for 5 years, and in judo, you always have to understand about keeping your balance. And all, he might be able to tell you stuff that you didn't know, right? You just ask the questions, and then you're always learning. I mean, to me, I mean, intangibles are great. That's a nice word, but most things are tangible. They are able to be measured. Okay. And look, I understand people that, oh, the Scottish, the English, UK people came over and taught, and the place used to be filled with UK guys. They always were the game. Oh, you don't need to worry about your swing. Well, that's not true. Okay. It's borne itself out that it's a combination of both, right? But you have to be able to see at each level and measure the levels. Where's a person's weakness? But in the end, the progress of playing the game is always going to be found out on the course with the player, getting him in situations and saying, what do you see here? What's working in your favor? What's not working in your favor? And this is the thing. If you want to touch on all the guys going back to Stefan Goes, and I know Kiefer, Sean Einhaus, go all the way up the bank. My son will admit it, although he won't admit it. And Mark Hummer will tell you that I'm phenomenal caddy. And it's not because I walk fast. I can tell you that right now. Because when I'm on the ball, I get people playing to their strengths and understanding their weakness. Hummer was there. He went this last tournament 59 holes before he made a bogey. Okay. And then the 60th hole where he made a bogey, the 61st, he had a horrible tee shot and we're in no man's land. And now he's pissed, right? Because he's hit the ball beautifully and made a lot of putts and he's frustrated and he's going to try a stupid shot. I said, no, you're going to pitch the ball out over there. What am I going to do from there? I said, well, you're going to know what you're going to do from there because there's no unknowns there. Okay. As long as the ball's on short grass, you can do anything with a golf ball. So, we're going to rescue you over the lake, over the trees, in front of the green, and get into what you do better than everybody in the planet, and that's pitching. And he's looking at me. And I realized that this guy's just waiting for something to go wrong so he can get pissed off me. Rip to rescue. I don't even know where that ball is. I said, I do. We walked around the corner of the lake, and there it was, 10 meters off the green. He hit the most beautiful pitch that lipped out to a foot. I said, there you go, Mark. I said, remember that your whole life. Rely on the things that you do best. Plan around the things that you do best. You don't run a short guard out at wide receiver and tell him to run an out route and you're going to pass him the ball. It doesn't work that way. You put people in position to be successful.
So when they're on the course, you get them to play to their strengths, which makes
Yes.
sense. But then when you're not on the course, you're trying to spot where the opportunity for improvement exists and work on that.
Close, trust me.
Is it something like that?
Yeah, but the thing is, look, listen, first thing you got to teach people is there are no mistakes. They're just opportunities to get better, okay? Mentally, you have to teach people that resistance is what makes you stronger. So if you get in a situation where you feel like everything's against you, wow, that's a great chance to get mentally stronger, right? You might not be able to do it right then, but if you write it down, talk to your coaches and everything, get yourself in those situations, say, look, this is how you need to react. And when you get better, you can react this way. And they say, okay, I got it. Then the frustration levels come down. Those are pivot points in a player. They have to understand this is really going to give me an opportunity to get better. I said, when you do that, it's wonderful. And like you say, it's an evolving process. And as long as you're learning it better, people will stand out there forever practicing. They go out and play for all that, and they don't mind if they miss some cuts and stuff like that because they know they're doing what they can do. And at some point, you got to realize not everybody can be Scottie Scheffler, not everybody can be Tiger Woods, and maybe you're the guy. Marcel Siem's a great example. I think he's an awesome guy, and he's a phenomenal athlete. I've seen him throw darts, not darts. I've seen him play ping pong, pool. The guy's got amazing hands, right? He look at him, he reinvented himself, got successful again, extended his career, right? And unfortunately for him, and I remember he almost got to the Masters when he's almost top 50, and he didn't get in. I really feel bad for the guy, but he's a classic example. He's had a great life, and he's going to continue to have a great life. And that's okay too. All these people, my son wants to be the best player ever. Forget it, okay? He should be the best player he can be, and that has to be the goal. I think we can leave it at that. I know Adi's got to go.
Yeah, no, yeah, he just went, he'll be back. But I think that's very interesting. Let's take it to a close for this session. And I would love to hear how you measure desire and passion, which are intangibles in my mind. It's very difficult to
All
measure.
your time coming together.
Right.
The longer you stay there and the higher the quality, and the quality continues, that right there is determination. If you're just measuring time and not the quality of that what you're putting into the time, then you're just wasting your time. I'd rather see somebody go out for 45 minutes and do the best he can do and go home than sit there for 4 or 5 hours talking to people, unconcentrated. That is, to me, is really where you're going backwards. But you can measure that. You can measure all that stuff.
Let's maybe close with this. Golf is a game of scoring. The object of the game is to get the ball in the hole in the fewest strokes possible. What, in your opinion, makes a scorer?
A guy's not scared to look at Michael Jordan. They talk about him and they say he never, ever, ever considered what was going to happen if he missed. He just, what do all great players say under pressure in the biggest situations in every sport? Give me the ball. Give me the ball. The guy that wants the ball, the guy that wants to be the difference maker, okay? That's all that matters. That's all that matters. And if he misses 10 times and he wants to shoot the 11th, be happy, okay? I think that's phenomenal. And I think we have to say to kids who try things to say, I think it's awesome to try that, but you don't quite hit your three with 240 in the air, okay? So we need to look at it, approaching it different. And when you hit it 240, you can go for it. You just got to show them what their limits are. But you got to love that. You cannot, and I probably was bad about this with Hurley. You cannot keep kids from pushing their limits. People that go around in a grocery store and the kid's in the shopping cart and he's reaching for stuff, people think he wants that. No, his brain's trying to learn, hey, I want this thing, can I reach it? And when you slap their hands, you're telling them stop learning is what you're basically doing. You have to be very careful with that. Parents have to know that what you do up to 16 is a learning process. All those trophies are not going to pay the bills later.
But you hear many experts talking about how golf is a game of mistakes. So wouldn't one secret to scoring be to eliminate or
Oh,
minimize the amount of mistakes?
make better mistakes. If you know what your weaknesses are, get yourself in position. Wolfgang Glava, who had a chance to actually win the St. Andrews Trophy, died at the end in the second round. Actually ended up missing the cut by one. And he said to me, I wasn't feeling good. I wasn't doing this. I said, Wolfgang, you were 3 under after 12. You had to be doing something well. I says, you pitched the ball off of tight lies for distance better than anybody I've ever seen. And it's easy for you. So if you got a 3 or 4 iron in your hand, just make sure you're missing it on the side where you can take advantage of that. Play to your strengths. There are good misses and there are bad misses. I'm going to leave you with this because I got to call my Italian girl and tell her I'm coming to get something to eat or I'm going to starve. Okay? I'm going to leave you with this. What is the difference between a good three-footer and a bad three-footer, Frank?
Well, a good three-footer goes in and a bad three-footer doesn't.
No. A good three-footer is you've got a long bunker shot and you've hit it to 3 feet. That's a good three-footer. A bad three-footer is you had a 10-footer for birdie and you hit it 3 feet by. Okay? That's the difference. But they're all three-foot putts. You understand that?
Do so, Schlingel do?
No. It's all about, you know, what's the opposite there? Yeah. And you have to know that, right? And you have to know that was an unforced error, as they say in tennis, right? Yep. It's an unforced error. You have to realize, hey, I love the fact that you wanted to make that putt, but we got to keep moving that ball till it goes in the hole.
Right. So we're talking about playable misses. Adi, what are your thoughts about how you what makes a score?
Yeah, I never took on a player who asked who came to me and said, can you coach me? If he were not comfortable playing for crowd, if he was not able to finish a tournament. Because that's some fundamentals you need to bring with you if you want to be really good. Mm-hmm. There are some people who can learn that, but most of the time you need to be that kind of a person. I always remember one scenario at the US Open when Ricky Fowler was standing on the green, and he was a perfect example of a guy who was absolutely in here and now. He was just, you know, rolling his ball, maybe, you know, cleaning or whatever. And this caddy walks in almost behind him, and he's walking into the line of another player on the putting line. And this guy just goes like this backwards and point up and says, stop. So he's so in here now. He's taking everything in. He's so much in this, you know, situation. There's nothing troubling him. He's just so much awareness of where he is and what he's doing. If you tend to get into really a block out and you get anxious, you get into your left brain and you don't get the feel anymore. You don't know the brakes. You can't see where the ball is rolling. You are really going to fight all your life to be a good player. Yes. To be a scoring guy, you need to read the situation. You need to see the lie of the golf ball. You need to see what you're dealing with. And you need to connect that to your system, to your brain. Yes. And you need to be one with that thing. And actually, you learn to know who is there. I mean, I had a round with your son in Mallorca. He was so much in every situation. He never failed to any situation. And you play with another guy and who is much better ball striker, much better longer and everything. But he doesn't understand the lie of the golf ball. He doesn't understand what the green is going to do to the golf ball. Doesn't understand really what it needs to score the game. So some of those things you can't teach. Some of those things are really the player has to bring with him. Yes. So to your question about that, this is so I tend not to say to guys who really have never played under pressure, never won anything, I say, sorry, you need to do that first.
But it has to be intrinsically in there. Hurley, I mean, he was incredible with the ball since he was 2 years old. He could do stuff that I'm like, wow. You know, I mean,
yeah. He got really good. He was good. He was really good.
When he was, he had this U.S. kids, you know, lob wedge, and those were phenomenal lob wedge, very narrow, cell sharp leading edge. He would sit there in the living room and he would put like bowls up all over the place, up high, low, and he'd be pitching these balls into these bowls. And I'm thinking, does it ever occur to him if he blades that, he'd break our TV? It never occurred to him. And it's the stuff that he did naturally. I asked him one time, I said, gee whiz, Hurley, how do you do that? He was 4 years old. And you know what the answer was? Kannst nur machen, wenn du nicht dran denkst. I mean, there's a 4-year-old kid who says you can't consciously make effort, it has to come. And I was like, wow. I said, Eyes, unbelievable. I just said to myself, man,
don't
I
think
said,
about it.
Well, don't have to think about it. The point is that he already, and this is what Adi went back to. This is the stuff he never questioned himself.
Yeah.
He always knew it was about getting the ball. That's all it was to him. And I remember when he won the EIM, Jeremy Powell hit the ball far better than Hurley did, but Hurley managed the ball and he had a phenomenal short game. Yeah. He was a great putter. And it really frustrated Jeremy when Hurley won. And I don't blame him. And it didn't bother Hurley. He probably liked it. That he knew that his short game and putting was so good, it just absolutely ate away at those guys that it did farther and better than he did. But, you know, that's something that has to be in there.
And I think that's what separates great players from good players, is that you get the ball in the hole even when you don't have your best game. I would be remiss not to mention that one of your guys, Adi, Arne Svensson, who you said you've been accompanying for him since he was a small boy, qualified for the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. And I think it's safe to say that he will be one of your picks in the upcoming RotoFest.
Of course.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will hopefully be one, the first of many coaching summits with various world-class coaches. And the next time you take a lesson from a guy you've never taken a lesson from, ask him, who have you coached? And make your decision on whether you take a lesson from him or her based on that answer, because you can take lessons from somebody like Adi or somebody like Ted. You just have to go there. So having said that, thank you guys very much.
Work first and you don't have to ask the question.
Well, I mean, Ted, I know you're easy, but you're not cheap. So I think
I get the job done.
You do get the job done. And that's what it's all about.
And use it three times and it ends up in their basement, right? I bought a TCAD after I bought four plastic trolleys that were horrible. And I said, I don't have to pay $1,000. I said, well, I've already given out $1,000 and I've got nothing to show for it. So I said, I got a TCAD. I've had that thing for 25 years since, right? That's why I'm now a trolley expert, by the way.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll leave you with the great words from Bill Harmon, who's a friend of our program. A good coach is nothing but a set of eyes. Thank you very much.
If you don't have that, you're dead. Yeah, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Good luck to your guy at the U.S. Open, huh?
To the links, man.